I don't care what decision you've got to make. Don't make it alone.
Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Today we're having a conversation with someone who I've admired for a very long time and someone who's been very influential in my own life, even from a distance. Vern Harnish is our guest today, and he is the founder of the world-renowned Entrepreneurs Organization, and he's been the chairman of their premier CEO program called Birthing of Giants for about 15 years now, and that's held at MIT in the United States. He's the founder of Gazelles, which is a global executive coaching and education company, and is the author of a handful of extraordinarily good books, which I commend all of them to. The first one is Mastering the Rockefeller Habits, which again is a great book. Scaling Up is extraordinarily good, and his most recent one, The Greatest Business Decisions of All Time, I think should be compulsory reading as well. It's an interesting conversation today because what you'll hear as we go through the conversation is Vern has a very deep appreciation for dentistry, the profession, so much so that he can even talk about periodontal disease with some authority. And so he's obviously spent a lot of time around dentists. He understands the nuances of running a practice. And what we talk about in this conversation is how dentists can counter the changing landscape in which we're operating. There's obviously the corporatization, there's the increasing influence of health insurance companies and increased competition. And so what Vern does in this particular conversation is we look at how dentists can compete through scaling, and he goes through his architecture for scaling, but then makes it extraordinarily relevant for dentists and how to apply it on Monday morning into your practice. So I hope you take your pen and paper out and make some good notes, because I guarantee you there's some really great information for you here that's going to make your practice better from day one. So for those of you who are regulars, you'll know that we're running a workshop around how to create a profitable, scalable, and ultimately sellable practice. And this is all the sort of material we're going to be covering. So I'd love to see you there. And of course, if you'd like to register, head along to drjessegreen.com/nail it and register yourself there. So without any further ado, though, here is Vern Harnish. I hope you love this interview as much as I enjoyed recording it for you. Vern Harnish, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's fabulous to have you here. Thanks so much for taking the time out of your day to spend some time with us.
Well, Jason, thanks for hosting me and providing education to the dentists out there.
Yeah, look, you're really welcome. As I said just a moment ago, I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time. I've been reading your books, Mastering the Rockefeller Habits, Scaling Up, a couple of my favorite books of all time. So I'm really keen to dive into all of that material. But before we do, I'm curious, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about your backstory, because I'm always fascinated about people's own journey in business and how they arrived to the point they're at. So I'm wondering if you can share us a little bit about your story, the story of Gazelles, and how that came to be.
Good. Well, I grew up around entrepreneurs. My grandparents on my dad's side both had their own companies. My dad then was a rocket engineer, and he and a bunch of guys got together in Colorado and launched a company that was very successful. And we, were fairly well off. And then they lost it all in the 73 recession, and we went from being well off to poor. And we moved out to Kansas, and my dad and I became janitors. We called them maintenance engineers, which was fancier, but I cleaned 100 bathrooms and 50 bathrooms, 100 rooms every night after school, learned that old men are really bad aims. And quickly then my dad and I said, we got to start something. And we became appliance repair men for a local Sears catalog store. Marvin Ryan was the owner. Still remember Marvin well. And that's when dad taught me business and, invoicing and customer service and all that goes into generating revenue and hopefully make a little bit of profit. And then I end up joining my wholesaler when I went to college. And I became the number two guy there while I was in college, and we ramped that thing to about 12 million. And then I was hired away by one of our board members to build the Center for Entrepreneurship. And in 83, I co-founded ACE, Association of Collegiate Entrepreneurs, which we took global in 36 months. And Steve Jobs and Michael Dell and Mark Cuban and all those had participated various times. And then that morphed in 87 to YEO, which I founded. Now called EO. We're just celebrating our 30th anniversary this year.
Congratulations.
From there, I launched an executive program for EO at MIT, and it celebrates its 25th anniversary this year. And we've moved thousands of CEOs through that program. And it was the curriculum for that, Jess, that I developed that became then Mastering the Rockefeller Habits, the book. And after building these nonprofits for a while, I thought I should make some money, especially with the birth of our first child back in 96. And so I launched Gazelles. And really, the idea was the same that I've been doing since 1982, which is, you know, how do we help these companies scale up? And rather than just work with the CEO only, which we do in EO, we wanted to put in a process that really works with the whole company. And so that's what Gazelles does today. And we have a couple thousand active clients in any one time, 200 plus coaching partners. And Australia is one of our most active countries with our tools because of the great work Karen Beattie has done there with the growth faculty. So that's the quick story.
Cool. I mean, there's so much in that I'm really keen to explore already because, you know, with that lesson of the 73 recession that obviously your dad went through and you guys obviously went into janitorial services and then went from there. You know, one of the things that, you know, in my own life, and sometimes I find it hard, is when you go through a failure is to kind of look back and find the lessons or draw the learnings out of that and go, maybe there was something in that. During that time, were there things that, you know, you've been able to draw upon that have set you up for future success?
Well, I learned the importance of counseling. And I'm actually serious about it. But, you know, what was interesting is then in the 2001 collapse, I lost Gazelles. The idea came in 96. I launched in 97. We went from like a half million to a million to 2 million to 4 million, getting ready to do 8 million. And boom, 9/11 hit. And, you know, people had to fly all over the place to come to our events. And we were out of business. And I'd lost about $1 million in 8 weeks. And I'm thinking, deja vu, I'm living my dad's nightmare. But what I learned coming out of it was that I could lean on my customers. I'm a big fan of John Mullen's book, The Customer-Funded Business, in that, you know, if you can get cash from customers, that's the best way to scale. And so I went out to my customers and said, hey, I'll give you a discount after I raise the price if you prepay for the year. And, you know, and a lot of folks that provide dental services, you know, began to move to some of those kind of ideas of prepay and the like to get the cash in early and some kind of a discount if I get you on a schedule to come in and get your teeth cleaned and the like. And there's even more, I think, that can be done. But I really learned the importance not only getting cash from customers, but having a lot of cash to sit on. You know, Bill Gates always had a rule from the day he started to have a year's operating expense in the bank at any time. So if you want a year without a dollar of revenue, let's say you're in a dental practice and you get ill and you can't practice for a year, could you and the family still survive? And I got the religion and have lived by that rule ever since. And I got to tell you, when you have a lot of cash, at least sufficient to get by, you sleep so much better and you age so much slower. And I think that's worth its own weight in gold.
Yeah, look, I actually couldn't agree with you more. We have a very similar process in our practice. And again, in my consulting business, we have a really structured way of just organizing our bank accounts even so that we have money put aside for operating expenses. We have money put aside for the tax man. And then we have money put aside for profitability. And you're quite right. You do age less. Although, you know, I hate to think of how many gray hairs I'd have if I hadn't done that because I've already got a few, but that's okay.
The other real force there was my wife. You know, she said, hey, honey, I love you, but this entrepreneurial roller coaster you're on, you know, isn't fun for me. And so we literally there in 2002 set up the Julie Fund. And it's that idea you have to pay yourself first, but I pay her first and make sure that we've got that set aside as well, because it's pretty easy for entrepreneurs not to pay attention to building their retirement nest egg.
I think it's completely common. And even, you know, when I speak to dental practice owners, everyone's focused on building the business, reinvesting, that sometimes, you know, people forget, take that money out and as you say, build their nest egg and build their retirement beyond that.
And by the way, I'll be very precise. I think, you know, knowing the revenue of most dental practices and the like, I think, you know, lower your living expenses. We try not to live large as a result. Which, by the way, has been better for the children anyway. You know, you get the 2 or 3 year old car, you don't need a brand new one and don't need the mansion. And I think you just need to say, look, at a minimum, I need to put $250,000 away a year so that, you know, over 20 years, you've got five, if it's not grown at all, and five at a minimum is the new million. And you probably need 10 to what used to be a million. So I think you got to shoot for 5 to 10 million. For retirement.
I couldn't agree with you more. Certainly, you know, I can't speak to the United States experience, but here in Australia, you know, governments are, you know, cutting away benefits faster than they can because, you know, governments are largely broke. And so ultimately, it's going to come back to, you know, the business owner funding themselves and you know, putting that money aside early, I think, you know, is critical. Vern, I just wanted to talk for a moment about your book Scaling Up, because I have a copy in front of me here. In fact, I've got a couple of copies on my bookshelves. But one of the things that's really intrigued me about the title of the book, it's the tagline or the subtitle. And the subtitle is How a Few Companies Make It and Why the Rest Don't. So I wanted to ask, why is it that the few make it and the rest don't? What separates those that do and don't make it?
Well, that is the essence of the book. And we said, you've got to nail 4 big decisions. You know, you've got to get the people right. And you know, you hire the right people, your life is easy. You hire the wrong people, your life is miserable and expensive. You know, it's like not complicated. And then your customers are either happy or not happy, your patients in your case. Number 2, you've got to nail strategy. You know, are you doing things that actually are highly profitable? You know, in terms of the focus of the practice, the particular customers you go after. And I think most important, if you can get the practice to a point where you're able to say no more than yes, because you get more particular with who it is you want to serve and the services that you're really best at. Then obviously it comes down to number 3, execution. You know, you can sit around and talk about this stuff, but, you know, if you can't answer the phones on time and get people seen on time and make sure the treatment's pain-free and, you know, some of those fundamentals, it's going to be tough. And it comes down to just some basic routines of communication that's easy to break down, you know, just being married, you know, the challenges with communication, let alone you get, you know, 10, 20, you know, 30 staff members. And then last, we just got spending some time on cash. You know, you get by with decent people, decent strategy, decent execution, but not a day without cash. And it's not that you're not going to make payroll. I don't think that's really necessarily an issue with most professionals. But do you have the cash to take advantage of opportunities like a location that's come up that you might be able to grab, or a practice that you're able to purchase, or even that equipment that allows you to take the practice to the next level, if it includes, you know, IT that's so critical and being able to automate a lot of the stuff that was manual. So, and that takes cash. It takes money to make money. And so people, strategy, execution, and cash. But the biggie is really internal. It's this thing called EGO, ego. You know, if you think you know it all, that's the beginning of the end. You know, I'll tell a quick story of Mark Cuban, who is that one of the Shark Tank judges, like Naomi Simpson and Glenn Richardson are there in Australia, who, by the way, are both, you know, avid users of Scaling Up and fans of ours. Mark is this iconic, you know, same in the U.S. and owns all these sports teams. And I've known Mark for 30 years. And we asked, you know, one of our audience members asked him a question, you know, what's the biggest mistake you've made and what did you learn from it? And that's kind of a, you know, typical question. And he gave a typical initial answer, which is, hey, I've made a lot of mistakes, which is what you do if you're going to be successful. But then he said something very insightful. But he said, there's a fact pattern that behind almost every one of my mistakes, it's I thought I was the smartest person in the room. And that's when it gets you in trouble. And that's one of our first lessons around people. Your job as a leader is to have no answers. Your job's to get the right question and then find a smarter who. So if I can, I'll give you an example. We just had a bunch of money embezzled from us. This internet scam stuff is real. And about 150,000 of it was shipped to Hong Kong. Well, long story short, the police called us last week and said, hey, the funds are frozen. They've got it. They found it because guy had also defrauded somebody else, another victim. What I've got to do is get a lawyer. So I'm getting ready to say, all right, I'm going to reach out and find a lawyer. Okay, wait a second. Who do I know in Hong Kong that's infinitely smarter than me, knows what's going on there? I knew a guy who runs a significant company, got a hold of me, said, Vern, I'm on it. I'm going to get my CFO. And so the CFO, and we got all these kind of crazy quotes from lawyers about what it would take to recover it. And Derek went over on his own, CFO of a major company, to the police department, talked to him himself, which was fantastic in way of representing us. And was it because he lives in Hong Kong, you know, was able to ascertain much better information from that police officer and what's going on with the case, and then ultimately deal with the lawyers we're going to have to deal with than me. And that's, it's always a who question, as Jim Collins says. So I don't care what decision you've got to make, don't make it alone. And that's, I think, one of the lessons.
I think that's a huge lesson, actually, for anyone listening. You know, whether you're scaling up or not, I think surrounding yourself with people brighter than yourself is critical to your success. And
but Jess, everyone says it, but nobody does it. Yeah. You know, you're getting ready to choose a CRM system, and you think you're gonna, you spend the time evaluating and stuff like that. No, call a couple of people smarter than you, and say, what did you choose and why? And the decision will be made in 5 minutes instead of taking 5 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And better quality, faster decisions. Cool. What's not to love about that? So, Vern, just in Australia, the industry is going through some significant changes. You're probably aware of this. I'm sure similar things are happening in the landscape in the US as well. But what we're seeing is an increase in activity in terms of corporates. So there's rolling up an amalgamation of practices under corporate umbrellas. We're seeing insurance companies, becoming increasingly active in the marketplace. And so the traditional, mum and dad suburban dental practice is under threat. And what's happening in response to that is, some of the privately owned practices are becoming hyper-specialized boutique practices, which is obviously one strategy. And the other, thing that's happening as well concurrently is we're seeing, mini corporatization and a scaling up process. So based on those two strategies, one of the things I'm just wanted to ask is, in that competitive environment, is that hyper-specialization versus scaling the only two strategies that you would think of, or a combination of the two? And do you think it's absolutely necessary in that environment to scale to be successful? Or do you think kind of going down that narrow niche is just another alternative?
Look, it's always best to go down a narrow niche. But a lot of people forget that with professional services like dentistry, location is part of that niche. So there's something about just being closer. I don't really want it. Man, I mean, the traffic in some of the cities in Australia, I'm there, a couple times a year, is horrendous. And we live here in Barcelona, which is one of the capitals of dentistry. I mean, it's a place where people come from all over the world to, kind of do, what do they call that? Just like spa, medical services. But, there's two reasons why, there's a dentist literally next door to us, but this one's close. We're not going across town. So they are close. They specialize in children. And then it's that customer service. I was mentioning to you, we've got a lot of dentists that use our tools because it is highly competitive. And one of my favorite, they're clear. If you want to convince someone to buy your product or services over someone else, you've got to give them three reasons. And by the way, and Robert Cialdini, the father of influence, was clear. Three is better than two, better than four, and, crushes 10 reasons. And so this dental practice, after every patient, they give them a little survey, and it simply asks three questions. And all you have to do is circle a sad, kind of neutral or happy face. So a child can do this. First, was the treatment pain-free? I don't really care what you do to me. Just, I don't want to feel it. Number two, were you seen on time? Child probably not going to care as much, but others do. And how happy were you in how fast we answered the phones? Like, at some level, except for that first one, it doesn't really have anything to do with the technicalities of dentistry. It's that other stuff. that, you know, if you, it's a big corporate run dental office, but man, you're sitting there waiting and no one, you know, you got an automated attendant answering the phone, you know, you're going to, you can compete against that all day. And so it comes down, I think, to customer service and hyper-specialization, but location could be part of that.
Cool. There's a whole lot of stuff we could unpack around that. But what I'm curious to just understand as well, then, because you've worked with dentists, you've got an understanding clearly of the profession, the challenges it faces. I'm thinking, you know, do you have a case study or some lessons that you'd be able to draw upon of dental practices that have used your methodology to success? And what sort of things have come up in that journey for them?
Well, first of all, it really does come down to your people and how they interact with your patients. Is there a relationship that they have ability to build? Do they remember names and some of the background? So a couple of things. You know, there's an orthodontist down in Florida that did a couple of amazing things. One, really had the database set up so that they captured some of that personal information about people. All you have to do is kind of remember what was it they were talking to last time. Make a note of that. And when they're getting ready to show up, say, hey, ask them about their dog. All right. I mean, it seems so trite, but that personal connection is powerful. Now, in order to encourage that, what this orthodontist did is when he caught his staff, you know, doing these positive things, he would just randomly say, hey, Rod, you know what? Here's $100. But rather than just give him $100, he said, you just got the $100 gift prize. We've got a car waiting for you out at your lunchtime. I want you to go over to the mall, buy something for yourself, and then come back and do a show and tell us why you bought this for yourself. And it created just such, you know, rather than just give somebody the money, it really created this nice, fun family atmosphere that just kept everyone's energy up, and you could feel it when you went into the dental practice. Now, he was also on the bleeding edge of technology and you know, had the room that had all the chairs in it, that all the patients were in the same room, and everything was highly, highly efficient in how he ran his practice. And you can't, you know, not do those kind of things. But he had this spectacular culture, and you could just feel it in the attitudes and atmosphere, attitudes of the people and atmosphere inside the place. And so that's the kind of little stuff that's important. The book that I would really encourage dentists to read, in addition to my book, is called Secret Service by John DeJulius. And John runs a chain of spas and the like. And all the little tricks of the trade that he's put in there, I recommend that book to anyone that's in the professional services, doctors, dentists, accountants, and the whole bit, and just shamelessly steal the little ideas. Like, for instance, he makes sure that the apron that the woman wears is a different color if it's her first time. And they have a way of then kind of talking to that person differently than somebody who is a regular, and they have a way of recognizing that. And then obviously last, in your profession, like any of them, it's the ability to upsell, you know, services, you know, in terms of getting your teeth, you know, whitened and all that other kind of upsell stuff that is high margin. It makes all the difference in the world if you can get that kind of revenue per customer up. And that's just good sales training, reinforcement. And that's why there's been a lot of specialty sales training for dentists. And I hope that those listening to this are taking advantage of that.
Yeah, look, absolutely. One of the things you mentioned a bit earlier in our conversation as well, Ben, which I'd just like to come back to, is you mentioned at the beginning about the recurring revenue kind of model, and you said that you thought that there was some more work that could be done in that space. You know, one of the things we talk about is, you know, packaging services as a product, you know, where there's a continuity kind of plan or of that kind of nature. Do you have any examples that you've seen people do, whether it's dentistry or otherwise, do you think that was a really innovative way of doing that, particularly in that service-based industry? Because typically service-based industries, you know, the traditional paradigm is time for money or time for a particular service, or money for a particular service, I should say. Have you seen anyone really kind of nail the continuity program in a service-based profession really elegantly?
I've only seen it with lawyers who have certain law firms. There's one of our clients who's become big in just one thing, bankruptcies. But the thing is that he's gone to a fixed price so that, and it's publicized so people can kind of choose. And if you want to, if you're a small business, you can just buy X amount of hours of legal support. And it's at a discount rate from what would be a typical hourly rate. And it's crazy. Once you buy kind of a package of hours of service, you're more likely to use it. And so I've always thought that kind of pricing and bundling is important. I was also impressed. We just went by a dermatologist last night. My wife wanted something looked on her face, and she'd heard about this practice that, and there must be one on every corner here in this kind of area that we live in, Barcelona. But I love the way they handle us. They got us in right away. We had a consult, and they immediately said, all right, what I'm seeing on your face, this doc's really better for that. This doc's better for that. And this doc's better for that. And those doctors came in right away and looked at it and said, all right, here's what I think we need to do for this. Let's get this scheduled. And all of a sudden, before you're out of there, you've gotten like 4 procedures scheduled. Because first of all, they were so quick. And he brought in his device to look at it. No, it's benign. Everything's fine there. Here's exactly what I'm going to do. Let's get this scheduled before it starts getting really sunny out and the like. And it's like, whoa, they have got the docs in there. They've looked you over and they have already scheduled, you know, a couple $1,000s worth of stuff to do. And you just went in there wanting to see if you should be worried about this spot you've got on your face. And so I was really impressed with that process.
Yeah, I think that, again, there's a lot of lessons there that, you know, would be parallel for dentistry as well.
And by the way, I'm amazed that, you know, I'm chairman of the Reardon Clinic. And so we've got this executive health program where it's, you know, $400 a month. And on that, you get this once a year exam, and then you get this IV vitamin C quarterly, and you get this education, and it just sold as a package. And I'm amazed no dentist I've had has ever sold me kind of a teeth maintenance program that where I've already paid for, you know, my teeth being cleaned and these spots taken care of, and really sold me on the fact that it's one of the first lines of defense for heart conditions. You know, I just don't see enough out there that those periodontal infections can go right to the heart. And if your gums are bleeding, for instance, we know that it has more to do with being low in vitamin C. And I'm amazed that dentists then aren't, why I'm sitting there getting my dental work, got me hooked up to an IV vitamin C. And your gums are one of your first indicators of health. But I just don't see any of that kind of conversation going on and no package of services to take care of that part.
Well, it's certainly in the pipeline. And even in our own practice, we certainly have some offerings which we'll be launching early this year.
Really?
So we're looking at the whole concept of executive dental assessments. And because executives are time poor, and there'll be, you know, some sort of concierge service around that. And of course, there'll be a package process around that as well. It's similar to what you've discussed. But firstly, I'm really impressed with your dental knowledge. Vern, you're probably the first non-dental guest I've had here that's been able to talk about periodontal disease. So either you've spent way too much time in the dental chair, or you're hanging out with dentists a lot. So either way, welcome to the club. Mate, I do want to just quickly talk a little bit about one of the challenges that I'm sure you see in the professions where, you know, that people generally get into dentistry or their profession because they like the profession itself, the craft. And, you know, as a dentist myself, you know, I still enjoy dentistry, but I'm not practicing as much as I used to because I've got other things that I'm doing. But one of the hardest things I find for dentists who want to scale is extricating themselves from the day-to-day delivery. And of course, that comes back to having team in place, having great systems in place, all those other sorts of things. But, you know, some of the challenges that come up is, you know, this person can't do it as well as I can, or whatever that ego thing you spoke about earlier. Is there anything that you've encountered in your dealings with, you know, dentists, other service providers, particularly in that, you know, that craftsman kind of space, where you'd have some advice to someone who says, you know, look, I want to scale, but I'm finding it hard to get out of my own way a little bit?
Well, let me kind of take a counterpoint to that. You know, I love my craft of writing and speaking, and I actually hate being CEO of our global organization. And I had to kind of come to that realization. And so it was more important for me to backfill into those spaces than it was for me to go find someone else who wants to write and speak. And I've got surrogates who do speaking for us and the whole bit. So one of the, you know, one of the reasons why you want to have one of these little mini conglomerates that you were kind of hinting at the beginning of this interview is it's like any franchisee. You know that you need like seven McDonald's in order to have enough revenue that you don't have to be the one overseeing the store managers. You can hire someone who can oversee those store managers. And so to me, that's the reason, you know, for seven dentists to kind of get together and say, look, we like our craft, and what's driving us nuts and why we can't get out on the golf course as much as we'd like is all the operational management stuff that comes with this practice. And that's the, I think you have to find a way to outsource, or in this case, hire one person that can kind of oversee several of the operations, because it's not in your nature. And I don't think you necessarily have to go learn something that you don't enjoy doing. And that's where you just go get help.
Yeah, I think that's really key as well, because I was having a chat with a colleague of mine just yesterday, actually, and we were talking about, I think John Warrilow has a categorization of entrepreneurs. You know, he's got the craftspeople, the freedom fighters, and the mountain climbers, as he puts it. And if you're a craftsperson, I guess it's about finding the other people around you so that you can continue to be doing the things that you love. And I guess, you know, a strength is something that kind of gives you joy, not necessarily just something that you're good at.
Correct. You know, think about if you're a rock star, you know, you got a rock band. The last thing you want to do is say, all right, well, I'm going to stop drumming and I'm going to go manage the band and I'll go find another drummer. No, you want to drum. And so you go backfill with a great, you know, if you get the right manager and all that, your life's great. If you get the wrong one, you can be a great musician, but your life is miserable. So it's the same deal. So look, you're right. Go with your strengths, and it's what gives you energy is where you go with your time.
Hey, so Vern, what I really want to try and do as we wrap up today is, I guess what I'm wanting to try and give the audience today is a sense of, you know, Vern's top tips for dental practice. You've obviously spoken at length about the need for a great experience for the patients, relationships, having the right people. But, you know, if there were three bullet points that we could put on a billboard as, you know, the dentists are driving down, Dental Drive on the way to work, just as a reminder of things to focus on day in, day out, what sort of things would you have on that billboard?
Well, number one, and the thing that we're best known for, is this daily huddle. And I think it should be common practice in most professional service firms. They typically have the weekly meeting, but nothing replaces the daily. We've got this quick stand up and it's like, all right, who's coming in? What patients are coming in? Let's review real quick. Hey, Margaret, you know, is back. You know, she's having these issues. Boom, boom, boom. You know, hey, are we missing anything? Yeah, we're still having troubles with, you know, a particular drill, or we're lacking some supplies, or it's just this real rapid fire kind of communication about what's about to happen today and where are people stuck, what's in our way. And the leader's job is very simple: how to make their lives easier. And once I hear what that is, then I know what I need to do that day in order to make that happen. So this well-functioning daily huddle with the right agenda, with nobody dominating it, everyone getting to say their turn, you know, their stuff, and sharing specifics, not generalities. There's a lot of detail around that daily's either, it's like hiring people. It either makes you great or it bores you to tears, but it would be number one. And then number two is sales training. But it's, remember, no one wants to be sold. They want to be educated. And so it's getting everybody, including the receptionist, up to speed on what we've got to do to educate folks, which then ties to number three, which is the importance of having this one-page strategic plan, this vision summary, so everybody knows the rules. You know, it's like playing Australian rules football. You know, everybody, you got to know the rules. You've got to know where the boundaries are, which is your core values. Let's know what our three brand promises are, because we can't be everything to everybody, but we got to make sure the phone's answered quick, people are seen on time, and this thing didn't hurt. And once I know the three, much easier to deliver on than the 10. I just need to kind of have that little one-page plan of what it is that we're, you know, what direction we're all heading. And so that's it, the daily huddle, have this one page, and then really teach people how to upsell, which is critical in your business.
Yeah, look, I think they're absolutely three solid gold nuggets of information there. And certainly, the Daily Huddle, critical, that, lightning rounds, as we sometimes call it, is, specific, it's quick, it's insightful, and it's got an agenda, it's got a purpose. I love the one-page strategic plan as well, Van. And I know for anyone listening that's in the Scaling Up book, is there a resource on the Gazelle's website that they might be able to have a look at there as well?
Yeah, or even easier, just remember the name of the book, Scaling Up. And so you can just go to scalingup.com. And we've got actually a free chapter on how to do a strategic planning session, how to prepare for it, how to run it, has a sample one-page strategic plan. And we even have what's called the one-page personal plan. Because look, at the end of the day, you can't separate personal from business. And if things aren't going well at home, it leaks all over the practice. And so all of our tools are open source, Jess, as you know, and they're in multiple languages. And so it's all up there on the scalingup.com site. Plus, I've got about 40 articles on whatever topic you can imagine that folks can access.
Yeah. And I guess as well, Vern, when you come traveling to Australia, there's the opportunity to come and see you speak there as well with the growth faculty. And that's certainly another possibility as well. So hopefully we'll see you out in Australia sometime soon. Do you know when your next trip down under is?
You know what? After 8 years, I just did my last round of public workshops. We now have 20 coaching partners there in every one of the cities, and they're doing workshops, private and public. And more importantly, no one's ever achieved peak performance without a coach. It always amazes me. There wouldn't be an athletic team on the planet would think, or an Olympic athlete, they wouldn't think to doing that without a coach. Yet we run our practices without a coach. And so we think it's one of the most important things to do.
An interesting observation around that as well, Vern, is the Australian Open tennis is on at the moment. And
I'm watching it, man. I can't believe the Williams sisters are going to be in the final.
I know.
We're looking for a Nadal Federer final.
Aren't we all? I think we're all looking for that. But interestingly, I live in Canberra, and one of the local boys from Canberra is a guy called Nick Kyrgios. You might have heard of him. Anyway, it turned out he didn't have the best tournament this time around. And he's the only top 100 player without a coach. Interesting.
Flip side, you look at Andy Murray.
Yeah.
This guy just fought his way to the top, and it was all about getting the right coach. And, he let him go, Yvon Lendl, and things turned negative, and he brought Yvon back. And this guy's clawed to number one in the world, though he didn't do so well there in the Australian. But look, the coach is like everything. You get the right coach, your life's easy. You don't, or don't have one, it's going to be harder.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Hey, Vern, I really wanted to say thanks so much on behalf of everyone listening, but especially me, for coming on to the show. I sometimes feel that my podcast is a guilty pleasure because I get to talk to people who I find really interesting. and so I really want to say thank you from me and from the audience as well for taking the time out of your day to spend it with us.
You got it. Take care, Jess.
You too, Vern. Take care, mate. Really hope you enjoyed today's conversation with Vern Harnish. He is the first guest I've had in all the podcasts outside of dentistry who's been able to talk about periodontal disease. So that was a bit of fun. But more than just the fun of the conversation, you'll understand that he is extremely astute when it comes to business. He's founded lots of businesses, he's been through his own challenges, and he has come out the other side. Not only that, he's been able to help many, many companies grow quickly and become what he calls gazelles, those fast growth companies, through scaling. His four-step process, which is incredibly powerful but beautifully simple and elegant, is very, very applicable to dentists, and he did go through some information there about how to take that framework and install it into your own practice. So I hope you've taken some notes, and if you haven't, I'd say go back through the podcast and jot down the things that you think are most relevant to you. So as I said, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you have, please do leave us a comment. We do read them. We do like to get them. It gives us feedback as to what you find useful and enjoyable. And equally, if you can head across to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, I'd be really grateful. If you feel inclined, that'd be great. But until next week, have a good one, and we'll see you on the flip side. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.